Welcome to the Inside Edge, presented by First Merchants Bank. First Merchants Bank, helping you prosper.
Put it in the upper right-hand corner, just like a postage stamp. That's a good bingo.
Get ready to learn more about the Columbus Blue Jackets players and coaches, as well as find out what's going on this week in the NHL. Now let's join Bob McGilligan and Jody Shelley for the Inside Edge, presented by First Merchants Bank.
Welcome to Pittsburgh, where the Blue Jackets are getting set to take on the Penguins tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. That will wrap up their five-game road trip. It's a trip that unfortunately has not yielded a win for the Blue Jackets yet. The last loss came last night when they fell to the Arizona Coyotes by the score of 6-2. We've got a great show for you tonight, too, by the way. Jeff Rimmer, the television play-by-play voice of the Blue Jackets, Jody's partner on Bally Sports, is going to join us. Jeff's career is winding up at the end of the season after 20 years with the Blue Jackets, 48 years being associated with the National Hockey League, and he's going to sit with us, and we're going to take you through his entire career, basically, in a nutshell. That's what we're going to do coming up here in just a bit. But, Jody, let's talk about this loss last night to the Arizona Coyotes. Look, here's the thing. It was a tough loss when you're on the Blue Jackets side to sit and watch and take, and the way that it went down, 6-2, the final, a couple of shorthanded goals, all that stuff. But on the other side, Josh Doane made his National Hockey League debut for the Arizona Coyotes. His dad, Shane Doane, is revered in Arizona. Of course, you know, he came with the team from Winnipeg, and he was Mr. Coyote when he played. And then he worked for them in the front office too, right, when he was done. So he has been everything Coyotes. His son grows up in Arizona, plays minor hockey in Arizona, played college hockey at Arizona State, scored the first goal ever at Mullet Arena when he was with the Sun Devils, and then he gets called up from the American Hockey League, and he debuts last night. Two goals in the game. Two, not one, but two. Not a lot of guys have done that. And his family was there and so proud. And that part of it was fun to be a part of.
Yeah, you know, it was. It was a great story right all day long, game day, and you know, going through how the kid grew up as being the son of Shane Doane, who has played here for 21 years and just a wonderful person. I was surprised he's not with the Arizona Coyotes anymore. He's an advisor for the Toronto Maple Leafs, so he's not even connected to the call-up or anything that's going on. Watched his son get drafted after growing up here, and, you know, it was a storybook night for the Doane family. And when you look at Shane Doane, he's such a wonderful guy. He's such a great person. He did great things here in Arizona. Was a competitor when he played, represented Canada, represented this organization, represented the NHL. And now to see how genuinely excited and the joy in that family last night at Mullet Arena, I mean, the dream come true is stepping on the ice in an NHL jersey, one he grew up watching. And he used to stream fantasy or the summer development camps just to watch the players and see what was going on. He was a huge Coyotes fan. And last night, he not only steps in, he gets the game-winning goal on one of his two goals, and had a great night. He was a good player out there for them, and unfortunately, that was too much for the Blue Jackets, who had their own debut in Malatesta, who at one point was leading the team, most hits in anyone on the game was 7, and his night ended early with a fight at the end of that. So, you know, he had his own little debut, but for the Blue Jackets, yeah, there just wasn't enough supporting cast for some of these players at times. I thought they were going to win the game, but the script was written, it looked like, for Josh Doane.
Yeah, it did look that way. But now the frustration does continue to mount on this road trip. The first game, they looked like they had it won, lost the lead late in regulation, lost it in overtime, and that's the only point that they've gotten. Yeah. You know, the Colorado experience, not a great one against a really strong team that could win the Stanley Cup. Vegas, same kind of thing. And then what happens last night, I mean, you saw Boone Jenner smash a stick. You saw Eric Branson smash a stick. These are veteran guys that want it to be better at this point in time, and it's not going that way. But part of the reason, not all of it, but look at the lineup around them. I mean, there's a lot of injuries right now, and a lot of call-ups from the American Hockey League. That's not an excuse for losing a game like that, but that feeds into that frustration.
Oh, I think those were individual frustrations. Boone, he broke his stick because he's on the power play. They just gave up 2 two-on-ones on that power play, and then he tried to pin the puck around the on the wall, on the hard around by the goaltender, and it got by him and created an opportunity that they took advantage of. And then Gudbranson's on the power play. The game's over. I mean, it's a three-goal deficit. And you know, he's up in the play and he's out there and they're getting an opportunity late just because the game's over and these guys worked hard, get out there, and the last power play unit that was out there gave up odd man rushes. Well, he makes a little play at the blue line and they come down and score. So it's like, you know, you're not getting the save. You make a mistake, it ends up in the back of the net. It's already bad enough you're losing the game. And then those two leaders who battle and do everything make a couple errors and it ends up in the back of the net.
This feels like a trip where you win in Pittsburgh and snap a 14-game winless streak in Pittsburgh. That's just what it feels like. I hope I'm right.
I hope you're right, too, Bob. You think it feels like that?
No, I'm just saying it's gone so bad to this point, you would expect this, yeah. You would expect a loss, and sometimes things
I just look
the opposite
at Pittsburgh.
Happens.
I mean, they actually think they're still in it. They're 9-0 with 11 games left. They need a lot of help, but so there's some teams that are sliding, and if they could beat, you know, they're trying to collect points. They got a tough schedule coming up, but they beat Carolina tonight, and it was the welcome home of Jake Guentzel. And, you know, that was maybe that's the boost they want. I think they're too dug into it, but they're going to be a desperate team. And the way the Blue Jackets are made up right now, on the road against the Blue Jackets. So if you're the home team, you can exploit guys that have played 2, 1, 10 games in the National Hockey League at certain times of games. And that's what coaches are doing to this team on the road.
Yeah, you're right. That is what they're doing to them on the road. And it is the first of a home and home with Pittsburgh. And you know, I'll still have my fingers crossed and hope that something good happens.
You.
Yeah. But the second game of the home and home is a really important one as well, because it'll be on Saturday night at Nationwide Arena. And Jeff Rimmer is going to be honored at that game for his 20 years with the Columbus Blue Jackets. And coming up next, we are going to sit down with the man, the myth, the legend himself, the one and only Jeff Rimmer, will join us here on the Inside Edge, presented by First Merchants Bank on 97.1 The Fan. Experience the thrill of outdoor hockey when you enter to win a pair of tickets to the 2025 Navy Federal Credit Union NHL Stadium Series at the Shoe. Text OUTDOOR to 26791 for a chance to win. Again, text OUTDOOR to 26791. Message and data rates may apply. Well, the Blue Jackets getting set to wrap up this five-game road trip. That'll be in Pittsburgh tomorrow night, and then we'll come home. And the Penguins will actually tag along. And I think, Jody, they're just coming for a very special night at Nationwide Arena, a night when your television partner and longtime Blue Jackets broadcaster Jeff Rimmer is going to be honored for his years of service, not just with the Blue Jackets, but in the NHL and broadcasting in general. And right now, he has been gracious enough for a small fee to give us his time and join us here this evening. So, Jeff, thank you. It's great to see you.
Good to be with you guys, and can I have the money up front, please?
No. We have to see how this
mail,
goes
Jeff.
First. As you get down into these final weeks, what's it been like for you? Because you announced at the beginning of the season that this would be your last year broadcasting with the Blue Jackets, and now here it is. There's only 10 games left. What are your thoughts? What are your feelings now that you're coming down the home stretch?
It's bittersweet. It's emotional. And with each passing game, it gets to me even more. I love what I do. I'm very fortunate to have the career that I've had, to meet the people like yourselves, to work with Jody, to work with you, Bob, to be on the road with you guys. It's going to be tough. And with each passing game, it's going to get tougher, and I believe I'm going to be even more emotional.
Well, this season, going through it and going to all these different stops for that last time, it's enabled you to see a lot of people that you've met throughout the years, rekindle, renew a lot of relationships, have a chance to say so long in this particular role to some people. How valuable has that been for you? How meaningful has it been to make this trip all year?
Well, it's been very meaningful, and I'm glad, looking back on making the announcement when I did, and I was asked by several people, Jody included, why make the announcement now? And I just wanted everybody to know, and at the same time help the Blue Jackets moving forward. They've got to replace me. And it gives the organization some time to obviously digest what they want to do moving forward. So I thought it was in everybody's best interest, and it gave me a chance to publicly thank a lot of people that I've been associated with over these last five decades in the NHL.
At what point did you make the decision that this was going to be it for you?
I talked to Mark Gregory, our boss, over the summer. My wife, who has been a rock, she basically raised my two kids, Kylie and Josh, and she had a rough summer physically, and I just need to be around. And this was the perfect time, 20 years with the Blue Jackets. This is my 48th season in the NHL, and it's time I gave my family back because they've been great to me. It was time.
Does she realize what it's going to be like to have you home every day?
Yeah, she's not looking forward to it.
Well, Remmer, we're going to miss you, and it's amazing how time goes. I mean, you hear it all your life coming up, and people say enjoy it because it goes by fast. But now that you're coming down the home stretch, how has this year been? I mean, has there been a faster year that you've ever broadcasted?
Never in all the years in the National Hockey League, never in all the years broadcasting has time flown by like this year. And, hey, let's be honest, it's been a difficult year on the ice for the organization. I would much have preferred to see the team have at least the opportunity to play in the postseason and maybe get to call a game or two in the playoffs. But regardless of what's happened on the ice, I just think this season, and I'm sure you guys will agree, it's a more compact schedule, and the season has just flown by.
So you went and got educated to be a broadcaster, a play-by-play, which is what you do. And can you take us through what you do during the day? Because when I see you in the morning at pregame skate, and I see you in the evening prepared with all the names, numbers, and with our team and other teams, there is all new kids in this hockey world. How much goes into every single game? And I know that's probably what you're going to miss the most is actually calling the game.
Exactly. Walking into that booth, there's a rush, all right? I don't need any drugs to get high. When I walk into that booth and that camera light goes on and you're between the benches or next to me when we're on the road, there's a rush. There's an adrenaline that gets me. But it doesn't start there. There's obviously preparation that's involved. And I talk to a lot of young future or hopefully future broadcasters. I get a lot of emails. I get some letters. And I just tell them, preparation, that's the name of the game. And for me, I start preparing a day or two before the game itself. And if I can, I try to watch the team that we're going to play next the day before or 2 days before, depending on our schedule. And I scour the internet. I read a number of pages. In fact, I think back to the early years in my career, and boy, what a godsend to have the internet such as it is, because I used to buy 10, 15 papers a day because I wanted to consume as much information as I could. So looking back over the course of preparing for a game, it's the internet, it's reading various stories, it's obviously watching something that you're part of, NHL Network, and you get the latest information or you get highlights of the team before. And then in the morning, I get up early, as you know, I like to get up early, and I'm on the internet again, making notes. I've got my scorebook, I developed it myself. I shouldn't say that. Marv Albert, in my early years in Washington, Kenny Albert's dad, he had a great system, and it was just a card. It was a flip card. So I asked him if I could have a couple, and if he minded that I improvised on his card. Marv said, great, yeah, go ahead. And I turned it into a book so I can keep track of what the lines were 10 games ago, who was playing, who wasn't playing, looking back on teams that we played previously, and that was an asset. So I start working on my scorebook the night before, and then really once the notes come from the players, well, not the players, but the PR teams, be it the home or the visitor, I can start really consolidating the notes. And then as we're fortunate enough, we get on the bus with the team, go to the morning skate, you talk to various broadcasters, talk to coaches, talk to players. That's preparation. Then I go back after we get back on the bus and maybe grab something quickly or maybe later grab something for lunch, and then just put everything together, finalize stuff, and then get ready for the game.
And are you going to miss that? Is that something you think you'll continue to do once in a while? Do you see yourself sitting down on a Saturday night and making the notes maybe once in a while? And I know you're going to continue to read, and I know you're going to continue to. One thing that fascinates me about Jeff, Bob, is He has made so many contacts and kept so many relationships over the years. And I think, with everything aside, Jeff, I think that is what you've done extremely well and something that I watch. And it's probably it's such a big asset for you in your preparation.
Oh, yeah. I talk about how fortunate I am. I'm blessed to have met dozens, hundreds of people through all the years in the NHL, and I've tried my best to keep in contact with a lot of them. And it's great, this being the final ride, so to speak, to revisit and have a chance to talk to them, and it's going to be awfully tough. Am I going to sit and do notes? I don't know if I'll be doing any notes, but I'll be reading the internet. I'll be following teams. I'll continue to watch hockey on a nightly basis. And then I don't know what else will happen. I guess I just got to wait and see.
You're going to be on
things develop.
You're going to be on the phone a lot. I know that for sure.
What if I pay you to do the notes and then you just send them to me and I'll do the game?
Well, we can discuss that after the show.
We are talking with Jeff Rimmer, television voice of the Blue Jackets, coming down to the wire for him in his final season in this position. We're going to have more with him in just a moment as the Inside Edge presented by First Merchants Bank continues here on 97.1 The Fan. Tonight here on the Inside Edge presented by First Merchants Bank, we're talking with Blue Jackets television play-by-play voice Jeff Rimmer, who after 20 years is retiring from the Blue Jackets at the end of the season. Jeff, let's go all the way back to when it first started. Like, I knew when I was literally 8 to 10 years old in that area, I knew I wanted to be on the radio. Now, not necessarily in sports first, but I knew that's something that I wanted to do. At what point in your life did you realize this is something that you wanted to do?
The day I was on the snowbank in Calgary, and I was in house league after being cut from AAA before practice started. First player in the history of AAA hockey in Calgary to be cut before practice even started. I only went because I was asked to go, hey, get some extra ice time. And when I was on the snowbank, it was determined then that the next best course for me was to be a hockey broadcaster. And going back even further, as you know, I started high school in Calgary, but I was born in Toronto, and my father passed away, and my mom remarried, and we moved to Calgary, but I was a rink rat. I used to beg players outside Maple Leaf Gardens, because I knew exactly where they came up from the subway, from the Royal York Hotel to Carlton Street, and walk into Maple Leaf Gardens, and I used to get them to sneak me in so I could watch the morning skates. And I can tell you, before autographs became fashionable, I have ticket stubs with, I don't have them any longer, I wish I did, but I had ticket stubs with the likes of Gordie Howe and Bobby Hull and Tim Horton, signing little ticket stubs that I thought I would keep for the rest of my life. But I mean, I grew up a big fan of Frank Mahovlich. I'll tell you guys a story. My cousins were exceptional students, straight A. One's an attorney, one was a professor, one was a dentist, and we used to have family gatherings for holidays and the like, and the report cards used to come out. Everybody's report card except mine. And my dad used to say to me, somewhat reluctantly, look at your cousins, and they're all exceptional students. What about you? Frank Mahovlich, who was my favorite player growing up, the Big M, he's not going to help you get a job. You need a future. And I wish, if there was one wish that I had, I wish my dad would have been alive to see me work in the National Hockey League. But it wasn't to be, and I certainly miss him. But at the same time, I think he'd be pretty proud.
Well, there's no question about that. Absolutely proud. What was your first gig, the first gig you ever had?
I talked, there were rink rats and there were radio TV rats, and I hung out in Calgary and bugged this one gentleman that I've introduced you to. Ken Newins was my mentor at CFCF, or not CFCF, I was at CFCF, he was CFCN in Calgary, and just a tremendous person. And I talked him into giving me, on Fridays, a high school, college sports report on radio. And I had 5 minutes, and I worked feverishly to get information from the University of Calgary and Mount Royal College, where I would attend, and high schools across the city of Calgary, and he gave me that opportunity. And that was the first time that I was on the radio. Then went across the street to CFAC, and I did the weekend sports. I was promised a job after Mount Royal College, which is now Mount Royal University. And being the ballsy guy, if I could use that expression, I was promised a job, full-time job, in Calgary. And it didn't come to fruition. So I went to the general manager at CFAC, and I had a meeting with him and their sister station. It was in the Selkirk chain. I said, I need a job. I want a job. And he made one phone call to Lethbridge, Alberta. And he talked to the general manager there, and I immediately was hired to do afternoon sports on radio and then head from the radio station to the TV station, CJOC, in Lethbridge. Then it was population about 42,000, a lot bigger now. And I got the late night TV news, weather, and sports, which Jody loves to
I love your bust news, weather, on. And sports.
So
we still get it every day.
It's excellent.
Every day. Great resource.
Well, that
you
was a, that was
there.
A start. So
do that on Instagram every day. We'd appreciate it.
Yeah, okay. We'll work on that. So I ended up going to Lethbridge, and a guy by the name of Ernie Afaganis, a national sportscaster at CBC.
Legend, isn't he?
Yeah, a legend in Canada. Olympics, you name it, Canadian football, all other major world events. He called me. I didn't even apply for a job at that point because I was really kind of getting comfortable in Lethbridge. Small community, met a lot of people. And he called and he said, I hear some great things about you. And he was from Lethbridge, so he had a lot of friends there. And he said, I'd like you to come to Edmonton, and we'd like to talk to you about a TV sports job. Well, that's all I needed to hear. I got in my car, my little TR6, and I drove from Lethbridge, Alberta, through Calgary, through Red Deer, all the way to Edmonton, and I was hired 6 months later. And, of course, I had the pleasure from there to do the Olympics in 1976 in Montreal on television. I had the major event, as it turned out, which was Nadia Comaneci and gymnastics and her tens, legendary tens. So things kind of took off from there, and I'm very, very fortunate.
So how did you get into play-by-play?
Well, I did the Olympics. My wife was from Los Angeles. She was having a difficult time. Why, I don't know. She just couldn't leave the apartment when it was 40 below for 2 months in January and February. And I promised her if I made some contacts that we would try moving back to the States. We moved back to L.A., moved in with her family, which was kind of uncomfortable, to be honest with you.
For them, for sure.
Yeah. Anyway, almost got hired by the L.A. Kings to do some radio. But Jack Kent Cook, then the owner, who was Canadian, said, this guy is good, but he sounds too Canadian. So I told my wife, we need to go back to Canada. My tape was sent to two networks, CBC and CTV. Oddly enough, I got a call in the morning from CBC Calgary to go back to the CBC network. I accepted the job. But an hour later, I get a call from Dick Irvin from Hockey Night in Canada and CFCF Montreal, and he says, we'd like you to come and do television for us 6 and 11 p.m. Monday through Friday. And I said, hey, great opportunity, but sorry, I just accepted a job. He said, hold on, Jeff, I'm going to call you back. Called back an hour and a half later, and he said, okay, here's the deal. We're going to pay you $2,000 a year. That's for the whole year, more. Back in those days, wasn't a lot of money. But what sold me was, he said, I'm going to give you an opportunity to work the Montreal Canadiens hockey broadcasts. This guy, legendary, Hall of Famer. How could I say no? And it's what I really wanted to do. Go to Montreal, late 70s. They win 4 straight Stanley Cups. I'm not working for the team by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm working for CFCF radio and television, and I do the pre and the post game on the radio broadcasts. From there, still no play-by-play. David Barrett, who's the brightest broadcast executive that I've ever known, he was smart enough to hire me one time as the general manager. He calls me, knew I wanted to get back to the States. He had just gone to WBAL in Baltimore, 50,000-watt station on the radio side and television, and it's part of the Hearst Corporation, which he later for years until just recently retired himself, was the head of the entire broadcast division. And David said, I want you to come back to the States. I want you to come help me get the rights, secure the baseball rights in Baltimore. We want to get them back, and I want to do Maryland football and basketball, and I want you to be involved with that. Well, word got to the Capitals that I was back, and they were talking to me about next year. Story gets even better. So I start doing pre and post on the Orioles and do the afternoon sportscast and do weekend TV sports. And Larry King, who this is prior to CNN, Larry King becomes a quasi-fan of Jeff Rimmer. He listens. He's a big, huge baseball fan at the time. And John Miller, who's legendary baseball broadcaster, is there doing play-by-play. And he and I really kind of hit it off. Friendship-wise, and I do the pre and the post, and we'd spend a lot of time together, both on and off the air. And Larry comes to a couple of Sunday baseball games. In the meantime, he does Mutual Radio late at night. I think he worked 11 to 2 a.m. before CNN. And we start talking about hockey and the whole thing. He says, man, you know a lot about the game. Well, at this time, he's the intermission host for Washington Capitals hockey. So he says, I want you to come, Rema. And I want you to do a couple of interviews with me and sit in on the intermissions. So I I say, fine. The first time I go on the air with him, he starts asking me questions and introducing me. Oh, Jeff Rimmer, host of a popular talk show on WBAL Baltimore and does the Orioles pre and the post game. But he's got a hockey background. The guy knows hockey more than I do. At the end of the interview, he turns to the camera. And he says, this guy, Rema, he's your new host. I'm starting at CNN Monday. Well, this is unbeknownst to the Capitals. This is unbeknownst to HTS, Home Team Sports, the organization I'd go work for. And all of a sudden, they're scrambling because he's not going to do the intermissions anymore, and I've got the intermissions job. They were going to hire me the following season. Well, I finished that season, and next, the Dave Metzl.
So that... You moved right into that. Larry King tells it on the air, and you're doing it the next game?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Smooth transition.
Yeah, very smooth. And then David Poile, who then was the general manager for several years before he moved on to Nashville and started that franchise, he says, we want you to give you a chance to do play-by-play. And, of course, talk to HTS. And Craig Lachlan and I, actually, 89-90, I believe, we broke in together doing play-by-play. It was our first year together, and the rest is history.
How did you prepare for that? Because that's a totally different thing than what you're used to, right?
Well, I prepared for it when I was 12 years old. I was calling play-by-play. I'm sure Bob, shaking his head, says the same thing.
So you were calling off the TV?
Off the
in
TV.
In your living room?
Toronto Maple Leafs, Frank Mahovlich, Bob Pulford, Tim Horton. I can go right down the list. Peter Stemkowski. All guys that I got to meet later. And
any games you went to, you sit in the stands, and even if it's not out loud, it's in your head, right?
I've also got my first reel-to-reel tape recorder. I got it at Bad Boys, which was an appliance store. I think it was 1999. And I took it to the games with me, and I'm on a reel-to-reel and doing a little microphone about that big. People can't see it. It's about four inches high, and I'm doing play-by-play into it. So it was something that...
You would sit in the press box and do that?
Not press box. I had to sit in the last row of the arena, and people are looking at me while I'm sitting there calling the game.
And you had headphones on and a microphone?
No headphones. I had that little mic that I got at Bad Boys.
And then you would go back and listen to it?
Oh, yeah. It was brutal.
I'd love to hear it, Jeff.
I don't have it. That tape machine broke a long, long time ago.
That's amazing. I mean, I always wonder how play-by-play guys develop their craft, because you can only learn so much at school, right?
Right.
You guys go to school to learn what? How to speak properly, delivery, the basics of broadcast.
But you're right. You can't learn that because it's happening, like, it's not a controlled environment, right?
It's reps. It's all reps.
Yes. What, did you ever do anything to lower your voice? Is there anything people can do to do that? Or
Well, you can get voice lessons for sure, but I never got any voice lessons.
I was built with a bulge voice.
So
cigars and wine. And
and you would listen to the radio too?
Oh, yeah. I would go to bed. And again, going back way back to my young days in Toronto as an 8, 9, 10-year-old, I had a transistor radio. You wouldn't know about that.
I know. Young. Yeah, I know what that
is. Anyway, Foster Hewitt.
Yep.
All right. Foster Hewitt on CKFH radio in Toronto. And I'd be told by my parents it's time to go to bed, but they didn't know that I had a little earplug and I had a little transistor. Well, they knew the transistor radio, but I had it under the pillow and I would go to sleep listening to Toronto Maple Leaf games.
And they would pull you. I mean, that was amazing time. The radio, the description. You would be right there. I mean, he was probably the best broadcaster Canada's ever seen.
He was the first, and he had the first Canadian sports station, which today is the Fan in Toronto.
Yep.
The Fan 590. And when the station first went on the air, it was CKFH, Foster Hewitt. Had his last two letters of the description of the radio station were his name, Foster Hewitt.
That's quite a story, Jeff. You know, you think about that time that you put in. It's all about, for you, it sounds like, hard work and connections.
Exactly. And being fortunate, too. I mean, being in the right place at the right time. Let's not lose sight of that. A lot of that, obviously, was through my persistence. Ken Newman's, a guy I mentioned earlier, he said to me very early in my career, he says, you're going to really, I'll clean it up what he said, but you're going to really upset people because you're so aggressive, but it's going to help you and it's going to make you what you want to be. And I was aggressive, I guess to some people I'm probably still aggressive at what I do, but it's the only way that I know.
Well, it's a way that has certainly served you well. We're talking with Jeff Remmer, television play-by-play voice of the Blue Jackets, who will be retiring at the end of the season after 20 years with the Blue Jackets and 48 years in the NHL. He's going to be honored before Saturday night's game against the Pittsburgh Penguins. By the way, more with Jeff as the Inside Edge presented by First Merchants Bank continues here on 97.1 The Fan. Well, you better hurry because the deadline to renew your Blue Jackets ticket plans is April 1st. Make sure you get the best seats at the best prices. Plus, you can get guaranteed priority pre-sale ticket access for the 2025 Navy Federal Credit Union NHL Stadium Series at the SHU. Try your luck at one of over 1,200 prizes when you renew your plan at bluejackets.com/renew. I'm Bob McElligott with Jody Shelley. We're joined by Jeff Remmer, the television play-by-play voice of the Blue Jackets, who will be retiring at the end of the season after 20 years with the team. He's also going to be honored before the Blue Jackets take on the Pittsburgh Penguins this Saturday night at Nationwide Arena.
There's a lot that I admire and respect about you, Jeff, but the one thing that's always interesting I really enjoy is that you can take a good ribbing. People like to tease you, and I always thought if they don't tease you, they don't like you, but it seems like we run into Hall of Famers, executives, players, even players now. They like to give you a little shot once in a while.
Oh, I'm good
part
at that.
Of your shtick.
Yeah, it is, and I got to tell you, I go back to David Barrett. I'm throwing all these names around. And wonderful guy. You're going to meet him because he's going to be at our game on April 11th.
Okay.
Because he's got a winter home in Fort Lauderdale, and he's already reached out to me. He wants to be there. Terrific man. Terrific man. Great man. So in my days in Montreal, I was very close, obviously doing the Expos at the same time as doing the Canadians, and they're all my age, so they're my peers. I was very close. We went out after a game Saturday night to the Molson House in downtown Montreal. I was always around the Expo players. I traveled with them. My best friend, unfortunately, Gary Carter, of course, died way, way too early. And I put a lot of weight on because in Montreal, all you do is have press conferences and food and great meals. I put on 100 pounds.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was 250 pounds. And a lot of it was because Farrell, my wife, she got pregnant and I got pregnant along with her. But anyway, Gary used to say to me, hey, Rims, have another cheeseburger. And, oh, Gary was the best. And the players, Larry Robinson, Risebrow, they all ribbed me. And David Barrett, getting back to David, he said, you know what? You should have Everlast printed on your forehead because you are a human punching bag. And, of course, Everlast, the boxing. So, yeah, it's kind of stuck with me. I can take shots, but you know what? I can give them, too. If I need to, I can give them. And it's just something that, I mean, there are people waiting to roast me at some time, at some point. And Eddie Olchuk, who's going to come to Columbus Friday for a short visit, before he resumes his TNT stuff. I mean, he said he would crawl from wherever he is to come because you had mentioned, oh, yeah, we got to
do a Rimmer roast. Yeah. And everyone we mention it to, they line up and laugh. And, and that would be a heck of an event to raise money.
A lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Maybe for the alumni.
That would be a great idea.
Who is the biggest personality that you've met? You have legendary stories. A lot of people by now have probably read them or they've heard them before, but who's the biggest personality you ever met?
Obviously, Muhammad Ali. And that was certainly a ballsy move on my part to go to the press conference, and he had just been stripped of the heavyweight title of the world, and everybody locally knew me, but there were all these national people there because he refused to go to Vietnam, and ABC, NBC, CBS were there, the Canadian network, CTV, CBC, and they had this major press conference at the Calgary Stampede Grounds, and I showed up, and I was determined to get Muhammad Ali to come to my studio, which was just up the road on McLeod Trail, mile and a half from the Stampede Grounds, and first talked to Angelo Dundee, the world-famous manager, and he said, well, where's your camera, kid? And I was 19 years old, and I said, I don't have a camera, sir, but I've got a studio up the road, and there were a few chuckles from the people that knew me, and then they had this major press conference, and then Ali, oh, by the way, Jeff Svoboda talked to Ken Newins to verify everything that I said was accurate. He said 100%, but anyway, they had the press conference. They did the one-on-ones. Ali's ready to leave. And he turns to Angelo Dundee and says, let's go. And Dundee says, oh, hold on, champ. This young man here wants to interview you. And I tell you, he gave me the once-over. He looked up and down and sideways and wondered who the hell I was. Anyway, I said, champ, I'd like to talk to you. And he said the same thing Dundee said. Where's the camera? And I said, champ, I don't have a camera, but I got a studio up the road. And then there was bedlam. Everybody broke out laughing. There was no way that the heavyweight champion of the world is going to get into a limo and drive up McLeod Trail to go to a studio to do the interview. And he saw everybody chuckling and looked around, and he said to the limo driver, do you know where this place is? He said, yeah. He said, the kid's right. It's just a mile and a half up the road. And Ali said, get going. We're coming. And I race up there, tell everybody in the studio to get ready, get the cameras ready. Somehow word had leaked to all the secretaries in the three-floor building, third floor, down to the second, the first. Everybody's congregated there. In walks the general manager, Mr. Davis. What's the bedlam? What's going on here? Jeff Rimmer says Muhammad Ali's coming to do an interview. And he starts laughing. Well, about 10, 15 minutes later, in walks Ali with the entourage.
Wow. Did you get a raise that day?
That's incredible.
No, I didn't get any money. I was just fortunate enough to have a channel that I could weekly sports show on.
And we don't have a copy of that, which is too bad.
Well, not only do we not have a copy, we don't have pictures because that was before the advent of telephones.
Yeah.
There were camera pictures taken, and I talked to a gentleman by the name of Chris Large, who was the studio guru, so to speak, and he said all that stuff was burned. They asked me to come back 20 years later for a reunion, and I said, I'm only coming if you can produce the tape. Unfortunately, in those days, they were 3-inch tapes, and they were very expensive, and what they did was bulk erase them. Well, guess what? They bulk erased Muhammad Ali with Jeff Rimmer, but I would give my right arm if I had that right now.
So would I. I would love to see that.
Yeah, that would be awesome. That would be exceptional. Muhammad Ali, Pete Rose, Gary Carter, I mean, the names go on and on for you, Jeff.
Yeah, they do.
What are you going to miss the most, Jeff, when this is all done, do you think?
I said earlier, getting prepared for the game, being around everybody, and then walking into the booth to do the game.
Yeah.
It's all-encompassing.
Last year during the playoffs, you'd live close to where the Florida Panthers play, and you got a chance to go there and all those playoff games. And of course, they played a long time for you, so you got to go and sit and see a lot of people. Do you plan on doing that a lot and kind of hanging around and being able to see people when they come to town?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'll be there for every Blue Jacket game, guaranteed. I'll go to a number of games, and, I'll obviously take in some playoff games here this spring as well.
Well, Jeff, can't thank you enough. Like, personally, you have been great to me from even before the time that I got here. When you left Florida, I made a call to George Matthews trying to find out if another radio guy in the NHL might get that TV job, and he called me back and said, Jeff Rimmer said you should apply for that job, the TV job, which I almost got, and thankfully I didn't, as it all turned out. But even before I worked with you here, you've been great to me, and it has been an honor and a pleasure to work with you for the 15 years that I've been in Columbus. You will very much be missed. It'll be a different place to come to, Nationwide Arena, when you're not there in that booth. And I want you to know that honestly and sincerely. And thank you for everything. It's much, much appreciated.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, Rimmer, thanks, buddy. It's been a fun ride. It's going to be tough to see you go. Won't be the same. I don't think things are ever going to be the same without you. But you've done a lot for this, not just us as people, but the Columbus Blue Jackets organization and the National Hockey League is a better place with you in it.
I appreciate that.
Saturday night, Pittsburgh Penguins are in town. Make sure you're out at the game to see the Blue Jackets and the Penguins. That's a great drawing card, but Jeff Rimmer will be honored at that game, and we hope that you'll come out and join us and be a big part of that, because this man deserves it. He's been a part of your lives. He's been a part of our lives. And come out and say goodbye. Farewell, goodbye, whatever it is. It's not the end. It's just a pause. Jeff, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, that's going to do it for tonight's show. I want to remind you the Blue Jackets are playing here in Pittsburgh tomorrow night. That's a 7 o'clock start. Pre-game coverage starts at 6:30 on the Blue Jackets Radio Network and on Bally Sports. And the Blue Jackets are at home to take on the Penguins on Saturday at 7. Thanks once again to Jeff Rimmer for being our guest. For Jody Shelley, I'm Bob McElligott. Thank you for listening to The Inside Edge, presented by First Merchants Bank, right here on 97.1 The Fan.